Welcome to Talk About Jazz with Doug Hall. I'm your host, Doug Hall. Today, our musical guest is Jennifer Wharton, and she is a low brass trombone specialist based in New York City, and she leads a trombone forward ensemble called Bonegasm. And that also includes her husband, trombonist John Fedchak. She is due to release her third album, Grit and Grace, on October 20th. And we will also talk about that release and listen to snippets from two cuts of this upcoming release. In 2020, she was awarded a grant by the New York City Women's Fund for Media, Music, and Theater to continue to bring trombone music to the masses. Jennifer has a classical music background and is actively performing in Broadway productions, including currently performing in Sweeney Todd on Broadway, and has held performance positions on West Side Story, King Kong, Beautiful, The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, Jekyll and Hyde, Scandalous, Wonderland, 9 to 5, and Curtains, as well as performing as a substitute in many other Broadway productions. She has won the Radio City Christmas Spectacular Bass Trombone Chair 5 times. And she is also a member of 3 Grammy-nominated ensembles, D'Arcy James Argue's Secret Society, Alan Ferber Big Band, and the Teresa Big Band. So welcome, Jennifer, and thank you for joining us today for our program. And
thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And I'd like to just start with a first question about your instrument, the low brass trombone. On a personal level, how does this instrument allow you to express yourself musically?
Oh, well, the bass trombone is primarily my main instrument, although I do play other instruments, especially it's helpful on Broadway. But the bass trombone is the lowest pitch trombone in the big band, and I just fell in love with it when I was a kid. And I enjoyed the role it plays. It's usually used as a workhorse.
Okay.
So in orchestra and big band, you know, there's not a lot of melodic action. There's some rhythmic action, but not a ton of melodic action. So I kind of enjoyed that role, just being part of the machine. And it was slowly as my freelance career was doing well, and I just realized I was unsatisfied.
Sure.
And I started to crave just some more moments to shine.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's, you know, giving composers no other option but to deal with us as melodic and rhythmic and harmonic instruments.
Right.
Has been so pleasing to deal with. The results have been amazing. So that's how I find my joy.
Wow. I like the distinction you made. I think that's helpful for listeners to understand, and me as well, the transition to being the direct drive of melody on an instrument. And your classical background, I know that you attended New England Conservatory in Boston for a period of time. Could you talk a little bit about the transition for you with a classical background to jazz, and how maybe your classical training and background was assisting you in your arrangements and structure of your jazz ensemble?
Sure. So even before NEC, I was a product of a community college program in California, Los Medanos Community College. And when I went there, I just assumed that I had to be a classical instrumentalist because I didn't really see bass trombones improvising.
Okay.
So it wasn't that I didn't want to be there. It's just I didn't see it, and it was scary, so I didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of fell into the classical thing all the while still playing in big bands. So I kept doing that through New England Conservatory, through like my first stab at a master's at Manhattan School of Music, and just constantly, that was always the playing that was around, you know, community, big bands and everything. So while I was still studying the classical stuff, you know, the that's usually how most music is first taught, is sort of this classical basis in education. And but I was still fulfilling just kind of my love for big bands by playing in all these other side groups. So it wasn't that I wasn't in the world.
Right.
It was just that I wasn't improvising.
Okay.
And as I was, you know, late 30s and just started to see all these younger players moving to New York that could improvise on bass trombone, I was pissed at myself if I could say that on the radio. But I decided to put my big girl pants on and, you know, try to take a stab at it. And while it's absolutely just terrifying, it's less terrifying than it used to be.
Right.
And in terms of composition, you know, I waited a while before I decided to add my own stink, if you will, to our album.
Right.
And I really wanted to make sure I had something to say.
Sure.
So, this is the first time on this third album that any of my music is being recorded and played. So, I think in terms of structure, everything just kind of, to my ear, it all makes sense. I don't know if to anyone else's, but I think it does inform it. It just means that I had a healthy diet of, you know, a very colorful musical upbringing that maybe can lend itself well to sort of orchestration.
Very good. So kind of down that same road, I'm thinking in terms of you as the leader of your band, and unusual in the fact that you have an ensemble that is really four trombone driven with yourself. Is there a more challenging or opportunist approach to your arrangements and even talking about soloing on a low register bass trombone? Is there a way, is there something that is more challenging and or opportunistic, I guess? So there's kind of like the challenge and the positive opportunity.
Well, we end up playing a lot more than you would normally in a big band or an orchestra. I'd say if you rank just sort of ensemble groups that people might know, for a bass trombone player, it would be like concert band and big band. You play pretty much equal amounts. And then like chamber music, and then maybe orchestra at the bottom. You play the least amount in orchestra.
Okay.
So, I think it's just the sheer amount of playing that we have to do is difficult. We don't like to do rehearsals on the same day as gigs.
Okay. Oh, I see. Well, that's an indication, right? Yeah.
Yeah. For me personally, getting around, you'll hear a lot of trombone players, tenor trombone players specifically, which is mostly what you hear in jazz today, if you hear a trombone. You'll hear them playing in a certain range where all the notes are pretty close together. And for bass trombone, the notes are really far away. This is a feeling we have. It's not like the arm, the slide arm has to move a lot more than for other registers. So while you can, like I could solo up there, but it's totally negating kind of the beautiful register of the low end. So I like to try and stay in the meaty bass trombone register just to try and, you know, find the music down there, because I have three other trombones that are killing it in the other register. So why would I want to try to be them?
Right. Yeah, it's clearly, I mean, a lot of breath exchange in the full stand-up foursome of all of you.
We're just pumping and blowing.
So down another road, which relates to the name of your band, Bonegasm, and I hope I've pronounced that correctly.
Yes.
Okay. Could you share with us your definition of that word?
Sure. It's a noun, of course,
right,
as I'm sure all your listeners know that it is a noun. It means the pleasure one feels when listening to a group of trombone players.
Right. Well, that works. I think that's a good phrase. I think that's a perfect explanation. Now, going back a little bit to the evolution of Bonegasm, could you talk a little bit about how you and your players came together?
Sure. We trombone players in New York, there are a million of them, and they all are amazing. This specific collection of trombone players are just some of the people that I love to play with and that I've been playing with the longest. John Fedchuk, obviously, he was an easy call. He's a fine, fine young player in his own right. Right. And I'm married to him, so I know where he lives. And Alan Ferber, we're actually from the same area in the San Francisco Bay Area, but I didn't meet him until New York, and he asked me to play in his big band, so I'm on all of his records. And I just, his, one of his tunes is, it was a huge catalyst for me to form the band. It's called North Rampart, and our arrangement appears on the very first album, and it's just a gorgeous tune. It was the first time that I wanted to learn how to improvise from a place of love rather than fear.
Okay, right.
So I grabbed onto it with both hands. And then Nate Malin, that I actually don't remember not knowing Nate, but okay. I moved to New York for the second time in 2005, and it seems like we've been playing together since then. And he's just, he can do anything. He's, some of the really high stuff you hear on the album
right.
is actually Nate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you all seem to have such amazing chemistry together. When you're blowing together, I watched a number of your YouTubes.
And it just seems to be you. You're the one.
Yeah, I'm the one going there. Yeah, so that was just in the last 48 hours. So, well, I thought at this point we'd move to the listening portion of our interview, and we'll cue up your two song selections from your upcoming release, Grit and Grace, which is due out October 20th. And we would
tomorrow.
Oh, right, already tomorrow. Yes,
yeah.
Excuse me. It is already there tomorrow, October 20th. And I thought we would start with Be Normal. And if you wanted to set that up at all, I mean, we can certainly chat afterwards. I'd love to just share my reaction. But if you want to set up Be Normal, that would be fine.
Great. Be Normal is a tune that I wrote, and I originally wrote it for voice and rhythm section, and
okay.
for my birthday,
my
darling husband arranged this for Bumgasm, and it wasn't even planned to be on the album, but I loved it so much we put it as the first tune on the album, and it features John, okay. and features Mike Eckroth, and our drummer Don Parrott.
Great. Okay. Well, we'll have a listen then. Has that enormous big band sound. I just always make some notes for myself. It just takes off at some point on this real groove, and the drumming just driving the rhythm in the background, and then the chorus of the trombones coming in and just nailing the melody.
Yeah, it's a really fun tune, and much it's a much lighter treatment than my original. My original was very dark.
Oh, really? Oh, I can't imagine even this being dark. How interesting. Wow.
Well, the name comes from, you know that scene in Young Frankenstein where Gene Wilder's asking Igor if what brain he brought him? Abby Normal.
Oh yes, that's a classic. Yes, exactly. I read that in your That's an that's an excuse I like to use at some points in my life. But yeah, that's classic. So this is kind of your celebration in a way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Good. All right. Now we're going to move on to, and I'm going to attempt to pronounce this correctly again, Menina Sozina.
Close. Menina Sozina.
Menina Sozina. Okay, excellent. Do you want to just share a quick setup for this composition?
Sure thing. This is written by the amazing trombonist and vocalist Natalie Cressman. She's also from the Bay Area. I'd like to give Bay Area a shout out there for good tromboning. And she has spent a lot of time in her, since she was young, studying Brazilian music. And this is, I was hoping she would do something Brazilian, and she did. And Menina Sozinha means girl on her own or girl alone.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can get a little bit of me just hanging on for dear life with the melody, and it's very fun.
Great. All right, we're going to cue that up now then. There's clearly some Brazilian samba beat going there. I mean, it really it really dances, really upbeat swing to it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to play. It was one of the tunes we played a lot when we were just touring California. And even though I'm working very hard, it's a very nice release to just. To play something that, like you said, is so dance-like. I really identify with things that are more vocal-like or dance-like in music in general. So when I get a piece like that I can actually play, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really lively. You can kind of almost see the Brazilian dancers on the floor, but it really moves. It really swings. It's wonderful. I just wanted, to go down the road of another question regarding mentorship. I know you've probably been asked 100 times, but it always seems to be, at least in my experience with interviewing and talking to jazz musicians, it seems to be such a central part in their musical development. Either there's one person or there's several that kind of sets them on a direction or makes the light go off in their head. So if you wouldn't mind kind of speaking to that subject a little bit.
sure. I mean, I've been so lucky to have a lot of great teachers, very few crappy teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to start way back in high school because I just hung out with my 90-year-old band director. He came to New York to hear my show.
Wow.
Yeah, and his name is Orrin Cross III from Pittsburgh High School in Pittsburgh, California. Also had John Malchester at Los Medanos College in Pittsburgh, California. I went to New England Conservatory and studied with Douglas Yeo of the Boston Symphony. Now he's now retired. He's amazing in my development. Okay. And yeah, since then, I would say that as a woman coming up through in this business, there weren't a lot of women to give me chances. There weren't a lot of women in places of power, but there were some women that gave me advice and men. Someone when I moved to New York, Douglas Provides, who's the Ramonis in the Village Vanguard, he was so helpful and just so giving and wonderful to me. And I tell every new bass Ramon player that moves to town that he's the guy to know. But so he gave me a lot of great advice. And Ingrid Jensen actually gave me some very good advice when I was going through something and didn't really have any other female mentors or just people that were doing something similar to what I was doing and could understand what I was going through.
Right.
She was the one person I thought of, and she gave me some great advice. She told me that I needed something of my own, and that was one of the catalysts for forming the band.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. There seems to be, in any case, certainly a lot of different people, and I've interviewed several really young musicians, recent graduates of the Berklee College of Music in Boston, and they really seem to have relied heavily on a connection that they've made. That's been very important as they try to move to a professional stage in their lives.
What's really cool for me now is that now I'm in a position, you know, whether it's my career on Broadway or just going around and talking to students,
right.
I'm in a position where I can be a resource for them. And that's been huge. I'm really giving of my time as much as I can be, sometimes to my own detriment. But I really think it's important for them to know they're not alone, because that's what I wish I would have had.
Right, right. And there has to be just intense competition in these programs, even though, you know, the focus of Berklee, as I'm learning, is to people to share and to be open and to learn from one another. But it certainly must be intimidating at times, even with the talent that is already there. And that musicians such as yourself have, there's still that big world to have to face professionally. I thought as we closed down to the last few minutes of the interview, I just would ask you to share with us any future projects or events, performances, et cetera, that you're going to be involved with moving forward in 24.
Sure. Well, we have our album release at the Jazz Gallery this coming Wednesday, October 25th, two sets, 7:30 and 9:30, I believe. You can find tickets on the Jazz Gallery website. We also are going to Penn State Barons, I think it's pronounced. It's an Erie. We're doing a noon concert there, and then we're playing at Bop Stop in Cleveland that night, November 10th.
Okay.
And then I kind of go into Christmas jail because I'm doing the Radio City Christmas show for all of November and December, in addition to playing Sweeney Todd on Broadway. And then in January, we're going to head out to the Jazz Education Network Conference in New Orleans and perform there on Thursday, January 4th.
Well, you're busy. That's wonderful.
Yeah,
and,
very busy.
So I want to thank you again for joining us today and sharing about your musical background and your musical experience and Bonegasm and the upcoming release, which is actually already tomorrow, Grit and Grace. And we always appreciate the opportunity to speak to professional musicians and have them share a little bit about their life and their music. So thank you for joining us today, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.